This podcast is a Bendigedig Media production.
Hello, I'm Michael Sheen, and you are listening to a Touchline Rant podcast.
Hello, welcome to episode 216 of the Touchline Rant podcast. I'm very, very pleased to be back after an extended break where no football was played, yet we still managed to do some podcasts somehow. Really, really pleased to be joined today by the OG Luke. How you doing, Luke?
I'm very well. I'm very amazing. Well.
And a pod first that myself and Dan are on the same podcast. So strap in, folks. How you doing, Dan?
I am absolutely fantastic. On top of the world. Even better that I get to be on my debut podcast with you.
Oh, baby. That's
it's going to be gold.
Goosebumps. I'm getting goosebumps.
I'm getting an erection.
Oh, God, it's starting so well. So today this is a wonderful combination. We've squad rotated from last week, is a whole new lineup, other than the captain. So let's see what we've got to talk about today. As you'll probably
if you're throwing a little game out there, Steve, if you could pick as this trio an attacking three throughout world football, who would it be, bearing in mind that the other co-hosts will listen? So if you go in too hard, basically you're saying this is the cream of the ATR crop.
Oh, what? So you mean, so compare us as a trio to a world football three?
A famous trio.
Oh, Jesus. I mean, I don't really feel like I know Dan well enough as with a rapport to start comparing him to people, but based on, I do listen to the podcast when I'm not on it. So based on, I'll do it based on that. But I don't know. I mean, is this too shitty to say that we could be compared to the budget Liverpool three that was, at Bournemouth a few seasons ago, which was, Ryan Fraser, Callum Wilson, and, who was the other one on the other wing? But basically they just called them the little Liverpool.
I think you've gone in well. That's with great humility. So that's great.
Messy. I like to start self-deprecating rather than go in too hard.
For the complete opposite, we are the United Trinity. We are the best Lauren Charlton of this podcast.
Oh, yeah. Okay, fair enough. Well then, yeah.
Listen, they had a great team around them, but ultimately they are the ones on the statue.
Very, very nice bringing the other people back into that by saying we've got a great team around us. I think that's a good happy medium, actually. They can't be angry about that. We'll hear the WhatsApp blowing up in the next couple of days.
Oh, we're getting kicked out of that WhatsApp group. Yeah, it's fine. We're not welcome.
Right, I'll make this all moderators. It'll be fine.
Can we change the WhatsApp icon to the, you know, the Trinity statue outside Old Trafford, but with our faces on?
Yeah, great shot.
That'll be it. I'll Photoshop our heads on it for the picture.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Or you know, if we are gonna lose all humility, then we should go really big and be, you know, Rivaldo, who was in that 2002 World Cup winners? Ronaldinho. Big time. Just go
that
big
was,
time.
That was a good three. That was a good three. I mean, you said Bournemouth.
But I'm more Ronaldo now. Like, you know, when he's put on, like when he's at 20 stone and terrible at poker.
That's fine. I'll take Ronaldinho, and I think he's still in prison, isn't he?
He got done for a fake passport into Peru, I think.
Of all things to be done for, and of all places to go.
that prison football team were rubbing their hands together. Like, yes, finally, we got a ringer, guys.
All of them just like, right, has anyone seen Escape to Victory? Is anyone
Oh, man. Yeah, fantastic. Great. Well, that was a lovely little sidebar. But going on, we're going to carry on with another little game here. I just did a little bit of spying on the BBC homepage to look for some transfers that we could possibly talk about this week. I got a few jotted down. There's a lot of recency bias here, to be honest. They are ones predominantly from the last 3 days, because that's as far as I scrolled.
Yeah, fair enough. Sam.
Top proper thorough research on this podcast, yeah, as always.
At least you've done some.
So I just want to give you some names, tell you where they're going, and I want you guys to tell me how much money you think they moved for.
I like this game.
Okay, so just kick us off. We've got Nathan Collins, the Burnley centre half. He has moved to Wolves today.
Is he?
Yeah, it's confirmed on the website today. Quite a strange one anyway, I think, because I think last season was his sort of breakout season. Yeah. Still didn't play an awful... I think he kind of came in when Ben Mee got injured. So hasn't probably played a load of football. But guess how much money he's gone to Wolves for?
15 million. Not a penny more. And if it is more, football's fucked.
It's true. Yeah, it can't be more than 50.
Go on, Luke.
12.75.
Oh. 20.5 mil.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, football's
right.
How he signed a 5-year contract at Wolves. That is wild that we're paying that sort of money. And you know, I don't know what the contract situation was at Burnley, whether he was 1 year, 2, 3 years left or whatever. But for me, that still feels very hard.
That's ludicrous. That's outrageous.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I can see they're buying potential for 20 million.
Yeah.
You know, like, I can see his point of view. God,
for the player, great move. But it kind of feels like, for me, maybe they're trying to compensate for the fact that they lost Tarkowski on a free. By making some money back on a player that they probably wouldn't have made that money on. I don't know. Obviously, that's not something they can dictate that easily. But
idea of Burnley not being in the Premier League anymore. And weirdly, because we're talking Nathan Collins, who began his career there, but it reminds me of Stoke. Like, they became, weirdly, when Stoke City came into the Premier League, they became a mainstay. And when they got relegated, it actually was like, oh, I can't believe Stoke aren't in the Premier League.
Yeah, totally.
It's Burnley's going to be like that. Burnley's going to be one where you we're going to miss them.
But when they go down, you're like, oh, well, that's immediately your level. Like, once they're at that season, you're like, oh, yeah, that's fine. That's the... Because predominantly, that's what Burnley were before this long stint, you know, for a long time.
Yeah. It's an interesting one. There's only certain... Hit me with another player.
Okay.
I've taken your Nathan Collins jab. 20 minutes.
Okay. So, Flynn Downs, the Swansea midfielder, played quite a few games for Swansea last season. Had a very good season by all accounts. He has moved to West Ham. Apparently, he is a boyhood West Ham fan. He signed a six-year...
Everyone's a fucking boyhood West Ham fan.
Six-year contract under David Moyes, who's excited to have him there.
Of course he is.
Guess how much he's moved for.
Whatever they've paid, they've overpaid. It's West Ham. 3.25, I'm going to go for.
See, I was going to go like 4.5. So we're roughly in the same ballpark there.
Well, neither of you are remotely close. It's £12
million.
Okay, Jesus.
Right.
£12 million. Maybe I got this feature wrong, because stunned into silence is terrible audio content.
It's weird that you just... We're going completely... I mean, we haven't gone anywhere close, but we are the correct ones. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's football that's
even
wrong.
Though it's we have given figures wrong. That are nowhere near what the clubs have paid for, that means the clubs have done a bad job, not us.
This game should be called... Oh, fuck off! That's the response to everyone here.
Yeah.
That's the only reasonable response to hearing that Flynn Downs is worth £12 million. Oh, fuck off. That's what it is.
Flynn Downs, I'm not having that much money being spent on someone who hasn't proven himself at the highest level and Sam's like a fucking region of the Cotswolds. Do you know what I mean? I'm not having it.
Yeah. Wow. I got another one for you. So Saints are continuing their grabbing youth talent from other Premier League clubs and have bagged the signature of Romeo Lavia, Belgian under 18 international. Never heard of him. Never heard of him, full disclosure.
Sounds like an X Factor contestant.
It sounds
Romeo
like
Flavia. It's coming on as sequins
in the pharmaceutical aisle. So Romeo Lavia is gone from Manchester City's academy. Apparently he played once for them in the League Cup last season. He's a Belgian under 18. Guess how much Southampton Football Club paid Manchester City for him?
Dan, you go first.
£300 million. I'm saying, serious answer, £4.5 million. And I know it's not going to be, because my response will be, oh, fuck off. But I'm going with £4.5 million because that's how much it should be.
I was going to go even lower. I was going to go about 1.25.
Well, when you bear in mind that Saints got Livramento last season for, I think, £4 million.
Yeah.
And how good a season he had last season.
Yeah.
This, in theory, it means that Lavia's season should be 2.5 times better because they paid 10.5 million for it.
Oh, Jesus. Fuck off. We're going to have to put an explicit mark on this podcast.
Literally, I'm just going to put in the description. The first 15 minutes of this is Dan telling Steve to fuck off.
£10.5 million.
Never heard of him.
Believable.
Yeah. There's a lot of money going around in football. I don't know if anyone's noticed.
Yeah.
But it is being wasted.
It's crazy money. So I've got one more. You'll probably know this because it's a little bit more mainstream. But Welsh international Nico Williams got a permanent move from Liverpool to Forest. Do we know how much that went for?
No. I think... this is the only one where I think that because we know what he plays like, because we watch him play for Wales.
Yeah.
He's a starter for Wales. Wow. I've obviously got a lot of bias because this is my home nation. But we know how good of a player he is.
Yeah.
So compared to some of the fucking shit that's been thrown at us tonight.
Yeah.
I think it was around 15 mil, roughly.
Dan?
15.5. I'm going to go undercut him. I go 13 mil.
Okay. Well, both of you are much closer at 17 mil.
Okay.
I'll accept that one.
Reported figure. I wasn't trying to find transfers that were all ludicrously priced. I literally just tried to find some interesting-ish transfers. And this one, I think you're right, Luke, is probably the only one that feels at market value.
Also, bear in mind that this is what this fee will also be dictated by, is Jed Spence was obviously, looks as though they were Forest. He was Forest's first choice. Obviously spent last year on loan there.
Yeah.
Then they need a right back. Forest seem intent on owning every single young Welsh talent in the game right now, and some old ones, because I believe they're signing Wayne Hennessy on a free.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I think that Liverpool have also been very clever here. It's gone, you know, you're going to have to pay a bit for him. We know what he can do.
Their transfer business has been great. Like, they sold Minamino for like 10, 15 million to Monaco
Liverpool do transfers well. It will be interesting to see if that continues this season.
Yeah.
You know, splashed a lot on one player. And by all accounts, he was not.
Yeah, I saw some rumor mill column today about Darwin Nunez's first training session, and the overriding consensus of the article was, what the fuck have we just paid for? Which I don't know, like, it's just a rumor mill gossip thing, but
I mean, look, United beat 4-0 today in a friendly. I'll have anything, Nancy.
So that's that. I think that one is decent, and like you say, I think Forest have done some good business.
They've done well. Can we have one more? Can you pick one at random? I was enjoying this game.
I actually don't have any more that are for fees. I'll tell you what I do. I do have one that's for. It was undisclosed, but I looked into it more, and I think I found a fee. So I'll do it based on that. So Keane Lewis Potter, he was a winger who played for Hull. He's played for them for a couple of seasons. He's in England under 23. He has moved to Brentford, so he's moved up. Last season, he scored 13 in 47 games for Hull. Didn't have too bad a season. He's been doing pretty well. Generally considered like a star of the Championship, and always destined for a higher move. Yeah. What it's listed as undisclosed, but I did a bit of digging, and I think I found the figure. So, what do you think he's moved for to Brentford?
I'm going to say about 9.5 to 10 million. I think that might be kind of roughly the going rate for a good Championship player.
Yeah, British as well. Fits the profile. I see, I was going to say about 5 mil. I was.
Okay, well, neither of you are too far away. So it said 6, possibly rising to 10.
Oh.
So basically, both of you are kind of right. Which, and also seems, again, like a fairly accurate one. So, Brentford might have a good little bit of business after they signed the Aaron Hickey from Bologna as well. So
yeah, that's like a decent signing, that is, I think.
Yeah,
I think
bringing in some young British talent. So that's the end of that game. I've got a couple of like Welsh transfers just to keep our eye on. Tyler Roberts has moved from Leeds on loan to QPR under their new manager.
Rabi's gone
to Rangers from Schalke, which is interesting.
Can we just appreciate the weirdness of Rabi Matondo's career, that he's a young Welsh winger who went to a high school in Cardiff and was like rapid.
Yeah.
Like, he's so quick.
When I first saw the name
playing at Schalke. Rabi,
yeah, I know, how weird is that? When I first saw the name Rabi Matondo written down, I completely mispronounced it and pronounced it Rabi Matinado. And I was roundly had the piss taken out of me for several months. And anytime it comes up, I do, that still happens. So
at least you didn't think he was a Jewish like faith practitioner.
Rabbi Matinado.
Could have been
just
different.
Thought it was his title, not his first name.
When I first saw that written down, I thought, oh, religion's doing well in Wales.
Hey, religious on the left wing in Wales.
What's
going on?
Amazing. And another Welsh transfer is heart of the midfield, Joe Allen, has moved on a free from Stoke back to Swansea.
Back to Swansea City. What? That's the feel-good story that Gareth Bale to Cardiff City didn't turn out to be. Yeah, that is.
It's like the super low-key version of that.
Did well at Stoke, stayed there, is a brilliant player. Like, such a good, underrated player, Joe Allen. I think you have to be Welsh to fully appreciate Joe Allen. I genuinely do think that's... Because he's literally one of my favourite centre midfielders.
He was appreciated here in Stoke. I can say that.
Yeah, somebody... in Stoke, he'll have a big following in Stoke.
He's well kind of appreciated by Stoke fans in general, in terms of they have gutted that he's gone back to Swansea and they haven't kept him. Yeah, like really gutted.
He's a
great, for that level of football, he's superb.
Yeah, and it's an understated star power as well that he brings. Like, it's not like he just gets on with it. He's a good football player, and he's also experienced. So it's this like, it is this kind of this god in kind of midfielder going, oh god,
he's
a really good footballer. He's an international footballer. And Stoke are genuinely, like, a lot of Stoke fans are gutted by his departure to Swansea. Which, as somebody who works at the other side of the city, is fantastic to watch. but it is kind of, he will be loved in Stoke for forever, I think.
Yeah, he's a good player. I think Swansea have done well there. You know,
well, I remember when obviously the Euros were postponed because of the pandemic. One of the big positives that everyone in Wales started talking about straight away was that Joe Allen would be fit.
Joe Allen will be back.
Yeah, because it gave him an extra year to recover, and he just had a horrible injury towards the end of the season. So
I was delighted.
That says it all, really. Yeah. Like, you know, that you've got players like Ramsey and Bale in the squad, and Wales fans are, you know, lauding Joe Allen.
I love the fact that Joe Allen's going to a World Cup. Just 5 minutes forward. Joe Allen in a World Cup. That's the one thing the World Cup's missing other than dignity.
Wow.
And an acceptable human rights record.
Yeah.
Unbelievable stuff. Yeah, so there we go. That's kind of the end of my transfer roundup.
Can I throw a transfer-related story in the mix?
Of course.
To see what everyone's general. Man City doing the bloody unveiling.
Of Haaland?
Yeah, well, they did all of them, didn't they? But Calvin Phillips was ill, so he didn't go.
I reckon he's just gone. He's just gone. How am I doing that? Not a chance. Like, it's just such a... It's a weird... Is I watched it, and obviously there's a tiny bit of me that hates them simply because I'm a United fan.
Yeah.
But this made me kind of go, in what kind of world is that accepted?
it's weird.
Yeah, and doing a Q&A, and like the whole thing with it is just, it's try hard. Like, they kind of go, oh no, us, we're still local, and we're still keeping it real with the community. They don't give two shits about who the people that are there.
That's what I was going to say. It feels like they're almost trying to legitimize it by not legitimize it, because obviously it's a legitimate transfer, but I mean legitimize themselves as like a super professional club that hasn't just bankrolled huge transfers with oil money. You know, it's like,
they've just gone out and bought everything. Do you know what I mean? There's no history there. Man City's history is now.
Totally. It's like you said earlier about the statues. The statues that United have got up are of the Holy Trinity, and the statues that City have got up are of a guy who stopped playing from like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, makes a difference.
Do you know what I mean? It's unreal. I mean, Jesus.
I heard an interesting point based on following on from that about them flogging Jesus to Arsenal. And one of the points was, do you really think that... I think it was actually Cassie that made it on the podcast last week. So I literally just remembered that it was Cassie and not an article that I read. So I'm literally repeating last week's podcast. But I thought it was very good that she said, do you really think that they would be stupid enough to sell a really good player to someone who only finished like three places below them? And I think that's pertinent for Jesus, but also equally pertinent for Sterling.
Chelsea, there's no way that they'd let Chelsea have that. No. Raheem Sterling has, they are, even though they've had this, they've got this world-class squad. The fact of the matter is that with Hart, I genuinely believe the reason that Sterling's going now is because of the wages. Haaland has come in on an ludicrous amount of wages.
Yeah, yeah. Big time.
Like, if they're serious about, you know, they want to win the Champions League. They are a Champions League club now. This is how it is. Do you know, God knows. Do you know what I mean? But then I suppose we live in a world where PSG can be PSG and it doesn't seem to matter.
Well, so. I think PSG's bubble is going to burst once the World Cup is over. I was talking to a friend of mine. He was saying that the investment that the PSG owners have put in was a 10-year plan, Yeah. And that 10-year plan, I think, ends next year with the culmination of the World Cup. Mm-hmm. But also, they didn't just invest in the club. They invested in the city. And a lot of that infrastructure, they did, like, you know, they invested in, like, buildings and whatever. Apparently, you know, once they've done, and it was all involved with, like, a long-term plan to raise awareness for the World Cup and, like, get more people to Qatar and drive eyes.
It's weird that PSG could become the world's most ridiculous marketing campaign.
Yeah, ultimately, that is exactly, you spot on. That's exactly basically what it is. But I have a feeling that they aren't going to stay there forever, because it is, even though they've, even people with loads of money don't just keep throwing money into a pit for the sake of it.
No.
And, you know, I have a feeling that the manager,
Sunak.
Maybe they just appointed Christophe Galtier as their new manager in, like, the weirdest transition between managers ever, where basically, like, they hired him without making a massive song and dance about fucking off Pochettino. When they apparently they released a statement on their website that morning saying, like, literally, like, three lines being like, Mauricio Pochettino is relieved of duties. We thank him and wish him the best. And then it was like, oh, Christophe Galtier is here. Wow. Blah, blah, blah. And it was like, what? And then, like, yeah. But he was the manager that led Lille to the title the season before last. Has quite a good record in France, but is generally has a reputation of being, like, a disciplinarian, of being strict. And
that'll go down well.
You know, exactly. And, yeah, so I don't know what that's going to be like, but maybe it's, you know, trying to prepare for a new era where there's going to be less money and they have to start, you know, managing players properly rather than managing players with tactics rather than managing egos. But yeah, but who knows? Talking about ridiculousness, moving on to the Women's Euros, England absolutely battered Norway last night, the final score being 8-0 in the second group game for them. It is the record-breaking score, beating the record put in place by England 5 years ago when they beat Scotland 6-0 in a Euros campaign. Wonderful. I don't know if either of you watched it or have seen any highlights.
Norway was shocking. Let's just put it out there. Norway had absolutely no idea of how to deal with England down the wings. No. It's as if Norway had only just discovered that wings existed in football at that point. Right. We can use that.
What I loved was they kept cutting to the manager of Norway, who constantly looked incredibly stressed. Like, Even after you know, the second goal had gone in, he was looking incredibly stressed. It got to a point where he basically was sort of like, I remember looking at it and feeling really sorry for him because his fingers were, like, shaking. And I felt like, you know that thing when you, like, feel really upset that you know, you want to cry, but you can't cry because you're in public or you're, you know, you're too embarrassed. It felt like that. Like, it looked like that was what was going through his head. And it was awful for him.
The crazy thing about that, though, as well. So Norway are not a pushover. Under no circumstance are Norway one of those teams where they're just there to make up numbers. Norway are a strong side.
Yeah, I looked
in the women's game.
Yeah, in the FIFA rankings, they're only three places below England. England are eighth and they're 11th.
They've got some genuinely great players in their team. And I think that was the shock factor around it, I think, and why you mentioned there, like, the Norway manager kind of shaking and basically looking bereft on the sideline.
That's a good word for it.
Because it genuinely doesn't happen to teams like that. It's once in a blue moon. It will absolutely, it's demoralizing. That's what it is. It's a demoralizing result. the saving grace for the Norway team, and I think the one that they would kind of hold on to, is it's England's a home tournament. Like, England are going to be absolutely ruthless. Yeah. The first game, you can kind of say, fair enough. You're playing at Old Trafford. It's the biggest audience of the tournament, biggest audience, biggest crowd of the tournament up until the final. It's understandable that nerves would set in that game. Yeah. So England needed to relax into it. And that was the game where England clicked. It was scary sight. Every time England got the ball, you were going, Jesus, they're going to score.
Yeah, genuinely. And there was times when Norway attacked, and I just thought, and I didn't think that England's defence looked entirely convincing, but it was almost as if there was just an aura around England that made Norway fuck up when they got to the final third. It reminded me of that comparison that someone reminded me of a comparison with Virgil van Dijk, where people said, like, they believe that Liverpool's defensive prowess has effectively come from an intangible that Van Dijk just scares the shit out of attackers, and they don't know what to do when they get on the 18-yard box. I was particularly impressed with Ellen White's goal for the third goal, where she kind of they kind of ganged up on that poor center half, I think got subbed off at half time when it was 5-5 nil.
That's the lowest, isn't it? Yeah. If you're a center half,
it's basically down, she got
the one who's brought
yeah off. It was right. I felt bad. She basically had the ball sort of on her own, oceans of space in her own half, about 10 yards in front of the 18-yard box, and two England players sort of ganged up on her. And she got past one of them, but then the way that she'd done it was basically with the ball in the air, and the second one had cottoned on to her turn and just plucked it out of the air from off her foot, put it into the path of Ellen White, who had, you know, acres in front of her, which I always feel must be almost one of the hardest times to score when you've got that much time and space. And she was so composed and just slotted it in. Fantastic. Did a trademark glasses owl. I don't know what it is, but does that thing where she does the eyes, which was great.
whilst we are on women's football, I know you were going to continue there. No. But can we use this podcast to say, fuck you, Alan Sugar, you absolute piece of shit.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Like, there's always one prick on social media, and normally it's fucking Alan Sugar or somebody to do with The Apprentice, whether it's Hopkins, fucking Donald Trump, and now fucking Sugar. Shut up! It's not about whether if you're male talking about football. If you know football, talk about football. It's the women's Euros. You're going to have ex-women players on there because they know the game better than Ian Wright. Ian Wright doesn't need to be there, but he's there to give his own opinion on the games in front of him. Regardless to what sex these people are, let them talk about the game. Shut your face and stay off social media, you absolute weapon.
I've never realised how many people who are attached to The Apprentice, either here or in the US, turn out to be absolute dicks.
Go down the whole list of Apprentice. They're all shitheads.
It's almost as if this is a walking manual of why being a capitalist may not work out for the best.
This year on The Apprentice, find out which one's going to be the arsehole on social media. That's the first task. Piss off. Jesus Christ. No, honestly, winds me up.
We know Mitch and I, a friend, former co-host of this podcast, Mr. Jordan Lloyd, and he went genuinely, he needed to record an audio for the podcast, like a little edit. And because of his previous jobs, he emailed it to someone who was on The Apprentice called Alex. And he was like, I've literally emailed the former contestant of The Apprentice who worked with us in a workshop we did about 5 years ago. And it's an audio of him telling everyone why they should watch the Sunderland documentary on Netflix. So we've got previous with The Apprentice as well.
Oh, really?
Do you know what I mean? It's maybe The Apprentice should sponsor us. Have I gone, do you know what I mean? Like, we've got... I know you just called Sugar a
soft dickhead.
Do you know what I mean? Maybe this, I don't know. Maybe I've changed my mind on capitalism. Who knows?
No, I think it's I agree wholeheartedly with Dan. I don't think I could have made the point as beautifully as Dan did there. But it is, I think it is disgusting that even in this, at this time, we're still seeing this anti-female, anti-feminist agenda from like you said, Gammonheads saying, oh, I don't get it, or, you know, women, it's not as good though, is it? It's different. Like these women are athletes. They would run absolute rings around you, not just stamina, but football wise as well. They are, you know, like, I remember I was watching at halftime yesterday. They had like pitch side pundits, and one of them was ex England international, is it Farrah Williams?
Yeah.
And she was stood next to John Arnorisa, and Farrah Williams' stats came up for England, and it was something like 160 caps. It was a bonkers amount of caps, and like 40 goals. I was like, holy shit. Like, she's got more caps for England than like fucking Peter Shilton did. Like, that is ridiculous. And stood next to John Arnorisa, who played for Norway, and he had like something like 110 caps or something. I'm like, you know, that is, you need to respect these people. They have earned their way to it. And like Dan said, fuck off.
They're all threatened. Every single person who moans about it, every single person who doesn't understand it, they are threatened. They feel like their big masculine sport has been taken over by these women that are coming in and playing football. No, it's not. It's for everyone. You don't look at any sport and go, oh my God, like why are they getting involved with this? All right, mate, if you think that women shouldn't play in any of these sports, go and say that to a female boxer and then let me laugh when she knocks you clean out, you piece of shit. Like, it just genuinely winds me up. Like, there's no reason behind it. It's just people want to have an opinion and they want to look like, oh, I'm sticking up for the man. You can't say this anymore. You can't say that. Can't say this. Yeah, because it's stupid. It's thick.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't say it.
Women's football was more popular than men's football pre-war. And then during the war, there was games that were played by women because the men were predominantly at war that were attended in the masses. That like tens of thousands of people watching these games. Mm. And it wasn't until, you know, there was a semblance of normality in peacetime that people in the FA were like, nah, not having this. Like, can't be having that. And like Dan said, because they were threatened, because they feel like it would take away popularity from the men's game, or, you know, and it's a case of the women's game in the last few years has come on dramatically because people have taken punts on it from a sponsorship point of view, or from a, you know, from a, not, I say punts on it, not to be derogatory, but in the sense of there weren't companies that were willing to do it before, but they've either, you know, read the room and decided to get in on it at the ground level and build it up, or they're genuinely doing it for an altruistic reason because they believe that it needs to be seen as an equal game to the men's game, which, you know, like in Holland and America, they're now paying the men and women the same for the national teams, which is fantastic.
From a grassroots level, women's and girls' football is less toxic from the ground up. You look at the games, even the England game. So after the final whistle, they will have a moment in the center circle with the staff, the coaches, the players, and then they go and say hello to the fans.
Oh, yeah.
They go and take selfies. They go and say hello. They go and, you know, high five. Go and speak to the people that have gone and watched them. Imagine that happening in men's football. You'll get some 50-odd-year-old bloke covered in tattoo. Yeah, you shit. You shouldn't even be wearing that shirt. It doesn't matter. Like, you're wearing it. You're proud of that person that's playing. If you lose, you lose. If you win, you win. It's still, you've got that competitive edge and it's not toxic. You go, okay. Those Norwegian players were still kind of like, the England players had time for them. It wasn't like celebrating their face.
We'll
be really respectful. Yeah, we'll be really respectful. We'll pick them up because we've been in that position. We know what that feels like. You're not alone. And that's the whole female and women's game which the men's game could really learn a lot from in terms of the accessibility of it. The fact that young kids feel welcome at a women's game. Yeah, if I could take my 3-year-old boy to a women's game and I know he'd enjoy it because there's other kids there and there's girls and there's families and it's family orientated, that's fine. I couldn't do that at a men's game. Like, no matter where you sit, they've got family stands, but normally the family stand is the shittier seats and you still have some drunken idiot shouting abuse from those seats. Like it's worlds apart, yet it's the same game. And I think that's the difficult thing. And that's what people like. It's always going to be tribal in the men's game. It always will be because it'll always have that feel. But Jesus, don't just start picking faults in a game which is the same sport, just played by a different sex because you feel threatened. Really winds me up.
On that note, the fifth goal by Beth Mead, who got a hat trick on the night, was an unbelievable bit of footwork. Like how she darted into the box, she took it past like two players, and then just like one of the coolest finishes I've ever seen, just slotted it past. It was beautiful. Like, and I defy any man or anyone who is against women's football to look at that and not look at that as just a piece of footballing excellence, regardless of sex, gender, or where it's being played. Just magnificent. We'll calm down. We'll go and take some Valium after that. maybe not Valium. Maybe we don't go too far. But anyone got any other business? Anything to discuss?
No, I think we've shot my load.
Oh, marvellous. Dan?
I have also shot my load.
Wonderful. Well, it was explosively shot. So well done. Well done to both of you. Thank you very much for joining us on this week's podcast. We'll hopefully speak to you next week. Thank you very much.
Before I listen to a Touchline Rant podcast, I like a little bit of the bubbly.
Touchline Rant. This is a Touchline Rant. Touchline Rant. Oh, touchline.